All right, let's welcome our third speaker, Hollis.
Hi, I'm Hollis, I'm an alcoholic. Hi. And I feel the same way. I didn't want to wake up and come down here at 9:50, but here I am. I also get really nervous at podiums and speaking in general. So I'm just going to share my experience, strength, and hope with being gay in AA. My sobriety is January 10th, 2010. I'm currently looking for a sponsor. Okay, I had to correct myself. So my sponsor moved to California about 2 months ago, and I haven't been looking for a sponsor, so I've been catching myself in a lie whenever I say that. But I'm keeping my eye open, I guess, would be a better way of saying it without actually saying I'm not looking for one. But yes, I'm keeping my eye open. I'm visiting from Seattle, Washington. I lived in Tucson my entire life and I moved up to Washington. It'll be 2 years in August. And that's been a big part of my my journey and my sobriety. I don't know if anybody else has moved in sobriety, but it's been really interesting. It's been rewarding. It's been heartbreaking. It's just been like a beautiful journey. You know, like I've learned a lot about myself and about my recovery and just, you know, people in general. And, you know, I guess just to sort of back up a little bit, like I said, I got sober in January of 2010. I originally came in, my very first meeting was in November of 2008. And the way it had happened was I didn't have any sort of like weird, crazy moment. Like I just sort of woke up after a night of heavy drinking like normal. And by this time when I drank, like I woke up still drunk. You know, like I didn't have a hangover. I woke up still completely out of it. So of course like the obsession is still like, you know, in my head and like I still wanna like keep going. And then for some reason, like I had this feeling like I want to go to an AA meeting. And at the time I was living with these people that I met on Craigslist. I had reached out to my dad who lived like a mile, like less than a mile away. And I told him, I was like, you know what? I was like, I think I have a drinking problem. And like, keep in mind, like I'm still drunk when this is like going through my head. I was like, I think I have a drinking problem and I really want to go to an AA meeting. And so like, he got all excited because of course everyone else could see that I was a fucking alcoholic before me. So he like got online and he's like, oh, he's like, there's this LGBT meeting called the Pink Triangle on like 4th Avenue or something. And then I was like, and he like gave me the address and was like really excited about me going. So like I get ready really quick. It was a noon meeting. I get ready. I drive down there and on the way there I stop at a convenience store and I like buy a little box of wine. And like I have some of the wine before I go into the meeting and like I go and I sit there and I'm like wearing sunglasses throughout the entire thing and like falling over and like double dipping and like getting up and going back to my car to drink more wine and then going back into the meeting. And it was a complete shit show. But like, thankfully, like I had people there that didn't make a big deal about it or they didn't kick me out and they actually gave me a big book and they said, you know, keep coming back. So I thought that was a little strange, but I was like, okay, you know, whatever. And then I was out for about 2 months after that. And I finally came back in January of 2009 and you know, like I started going to that meeting regularly. But what was different was I was just going to meetings. I wasn't necessarily working a program at all. Someone said get a sponsor, so I just asked some random guy to be my sponsor just to say that I had one. I didn't utilize them in any sort of way. It was just so when people asked me if I was working with someone, I could say yeah. So I started going to that Sunday meeting regularly and like every other week I would introduce myself as like a newcomer. And you know, I couldn't, between January of 2009 and January of 2010, I couldn't get more than 60 days together. It was just constantly like, you know, like I think I can control this, you know, like I'm fine. Like I was just going through a phase, like I've been sober, you know, a month. So maybe things are different now. You know, I'm in Mexico, maybe I could have one shot of tequila and it'll be okay. And of course, like, you know, like there would be a period where I could manage it, you know, but eventually like shit would hit the fan again. And, you know, so I started to, you know, go to that meeting regularly. And then, you know, like I got sober in January of 2010. And, you know, what had happened for me was I had woken up after like a night of like heavy drinking. And there was this period where it was like a 24-hour period where I was just doing lots of coke and drinking, and I was in this nightclub, and I just had this feeling of emptiness. I didn't feel sad. I didn't feel happy. It was just this feeling where I felt nothing. You know, I had all these drugs and like alcohol flowing through my system, but I didn't feel it. And for me, that was like a really scary thing, because that was what I lived for, right? Like that feeling, that rush, that that moment. And I couldn't achieve that for some reason. And I went home and I crashed out, and I woke up and, you know, I was laying there and like I was in this weird state where I was asleep, but like my mind was still going. And this thought came to me. It was like, you know, if you keep drinking, like things are never going to change. And it's like, you know, dying's an option, but who knows how long that'll take. You know, you could live like this for the rest of your life, and, you know, you can live the next 50 years like always barely having a job, you know, always barely having family by you, always barely having friends, always just barely getting by. And for me, that was more like surviving rather than actually living. So, you know, I'd been going to meetings and I heard people talking about the steps, obviously. And so I was like, oh, you know, maybe I should do that. You know, it's been a year. I think I'm ready to like start like taking this seriously. So I, you know, started going to meetings and like I started working with someone. And it was really, really an eye-opening experience. My first sponsor was a female sponsor. And she was actually my sponsor for the entire time of my sobriety up until I moved. So it was like about seven years. And, you know, we worked together pretty, pretty well. And, you know, when I moved, that was one of the things that I had lots of difficulty with, was finding somebody to work with that was exactly like her. And then, you know, we met up weekly for like the first year and like read the big book, and like I called her every day, and she forced me to like reach out to other people in the program and call somebody new every day I hated it. you know, cause I have a hard time reaching out for help. So that was really, really difficult. And then, you know, what was hard for me in the beginning was I would only go to that one gay meeting, because that's where I felt most comfortable. And then, this guy that I had been working with at one of the gay meetings I went to, he was like, why don't you try going to a young people's meeting? And I was like, that sounds kind of stupid. And I was like, is there even like really such a thing as a young people's meeting? And he was like, yeah. So I looked it up in the meeting schedule, and sure enough, there's like a young people's meeting. And then I was like, oh my God. I was like, probably afterwards they like get together and they play board games and stuff. And like a couple years later, like I laughed at that because I was one of those people that would like, you know, fellowship afterwards and like play board games. And then, but yeah, like I went and like I was one of those people where I just had like this, you know, like snotty attitude. Like I would go and just like sit in the corner and like kind of like be antisocial, and like I'd be late to the meeting, then like I'd leave as soon as it was over. And like looking back on it, what that was, it was like insecurity. I felt out of place being like a gay person going to meetings with predominantly like heterosexual people. You know, I felt like I was being judged, because, you know, like when I was growing up, like when I was, you know, I knew that I was gay probably since I was like 10. And you know, like I knew it was kind of a bad thing because I remember having thoughts of like, you know, like guys having sex. And then I like say to myself, like, if I grew up to like be gay, like I wouldn't want to live. And like having that kind of like thought is like really fucked up, you know? So there was a part of me that thought that it was wrong. And, you know, like my parents got divorced when I was younger, and I primarily lived with my mom and stepdad. And like, I remember them just, you know, like they didn't mean any harm by it. Like they weren't exactly like PC or whatever, but they would kind of make references to like, like homophobic references. Like we had neighbors that would that were gay, and they'd like say like things about them, and that sort of put an idea in my head that that's not how I want it to be. And then, you know, it started when I was probably about like 16, and like I'd go to, I don't know, like Target or like a grocery store, and I'd get like homophobic slurs randomly. And when I started drinking when I was 18, like my, one of my friends, well, I had like a group of friends that I drank with, and they were, some of them were like bisexual and, you know, like they dabbled, I guess. And then, you know, like I started to feel acceptance because I was with them. And on top of that, like I was drinking. And like when we went out to parties, like I was like the fun token gay guy. And, you know, like I used that to my advantage and I loved it. You know, people wanted to drink with me. They wanted to like party with me. And I was like, cool, I'm accepted. And, you know, like, so when I got sober, like I had to learn how to like look back on that and, you know, let that all go and like see what that was really like and, you know, look at what that really was. And, you know, like I wanted to learn how to, you know, like look past my insecurity of like being gay. And like, once I started going to like YPAW meetings and like getting involved in YPAW, like that was where I had like a really big spiritual experience. Like it doesn't matter because I'm an alcoholic is what it comes down to. You know, and you know, like, so I've really learned to like embrace that and just, you know, like learn how to be myself. And, you know, it's been, I don't want to say that I'm like myself like 100% of the time, because there's still times where I'm kind of like hesitant, like around certain people or just like in certain groups where I kind of like shy away. But it's one of those things where it's progress, not perfection. And it's, you know, work in progress. Like I continue to go to meetings. You know, when I moved to Washington, I got involved in their, it's Whiskey Paw, which is a Washington State conference. And when I happened to move there, they happened to have their very first one in Seattle. And there was, it was really, really small, but it was something that I got to be a part of. And, you know, I'm really, really grateful for that. But, you know, on top of, you know, going to meetings, like I try to be of service, like I'm the GSR for my home group, which I don't like, but I continue to do it. When I accepted, just a really quick story and I'll wrap up, but when I accepted that service position, like I kind of did it like being a smart ass. So I was like, well, I'll take whatever's open. Cause I really wanted to be secretary. And then they're like, okay, well you'll be GSR. And I'm like, okay. So I got stuck with being GSR. Anyway, and yeah, like I, something also that I started to do was like, you know, I started to get outside help. Like I started going to therapy because, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't provide like individual help. And there's things that need to be addressed that Alcoholics Anonymous can't always address. And, you know, I continue to, you know, try to go in the right direction and be a good example sometimes. And, you know, I'm just really happy to be here. This is my, I haven't missed an ASCII paw since I got sober. So I think that's really awesome. Brandon asked me right after the conference was awarded last year if I could show up to this one, and I was like, okay, and I didn't think there'd be really any follow-up. And then, you know, 9 months later, here I am. So thank you for being here, and that's all I have.
All right, at this time, if there are any questions for our speakers, we will open it up to questions and answers. Yeah? Okay, wow. Kind of am too. Why do they put this in there then? All right, well then, since there's so much time left with and no, oh yes, you in the back. Hi, Brandon.
How did you, I'm sorry, I missed all of your shares. I just came in. How did you navigate, going through it, into straight AA, and then, which are you more involved in? And this is a question for all of the speakers.
Okay.
Are you more involved in LGBT AA? Or?
Terry, alcoholic.
What, Terry, why don't you come up and...
Terry, alcoholic. So for myself, when I first got involved in AA, there wasn't a gay AA in my area. Right now, since I've been sober, there is an organization in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky called GLASS, and it's Gays and Lesbians Achieving Sobriety Together. So it's not really AA affiliated, but it's a support group that we can get together and kiki, you know. But since I've been sober, there in Cincinnati, there is a couple of LGBT meetings. But for myself, I mainly just go to straight meetings, I guess, if you want to call it. But I'm very open about who I am and when I get there, you know what I'm saying? Like, I haven't heard, you know, if there's anybody that feels any type of way, they haven't said it to my face. So there's that. Okay? That's all I got.
Jaded alcoholic. Thanks, Brandon. So I'm greedy, and you know I fuck with women and men. So, so I have gotten super involved. Yes, girl. Snap, snap, snap. Hey, holla at your boy. I'm still sick. No, but it getting involved in like LGBT. The community, like I've picked up a couple gay boys in my day, but as far as like having that as a fellowship, like I'm not consecutive, like my home group's not an LGBT meeting. I'm not like consecutively at like Lambda, which is an LGBT hall here in Phoenix. I do a lot of YPAW and I'm like super open and like far out, you know, it's, you don't know what is gonna happen and it's like I'm loved no matter what. But yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, Brandon. And I forgot mine.
Hollis alcoholic. Well, my home group is a it's a gay men's meeting in Seattle, and that's every Monday night. That's pretty much the only gay meeting that I go to. Seattle's very LGBT friendly. It's very liberal, and like wherever I go and like within the area, like I feel accepted. So to me, it doesn't really matter. Like I just pretty much go wherever. I guess is the simple answer.
Is there any other questions?
Oh. My name is Susan and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Susan.
And thank you for all of your shares. I was reliving my youth. One of the things that I've been fortunate with is being the B of the alphabet soup. As a woman, it's kind of cool to shop both sides. As a man, I'm sure it's a whole different story, but part of my insecurity arose from, oh, I'm different. But then as soon as I figured out, wow, I'm more normal than I realized, I took it upon myself to be the hand to always be there. And so I have my ways of reaching out so that those that are walking behind me, they can kind of exhale and say, oh, wow, I'm not alone. What do you do to bring in those that are walking behind you? What do you do to help get them into the fold?
Nice question. Yeah, Terry alcoholic. So for myself, it was really hard for me because I searched for places to be openly gay, trisexual, whatever that looks like. But when I got sober. And I couldn't find anywhere. There was not a sober living house that was, you know, directly in my area, anyways, for LGBT people. So the closest thing I could find, like I said earlier, was GLASS. I moved to Northern Kentucky, and when I did that, I moved into a sober living home. First time I ever lived with a group of dudes. So we did that, and like as that grew, those people kind of evolved back out. So then that house I took over, and I made it LGBT through the owners of it. And it was something that I was super happy, you know, to do because it was bringing people who were searching for the same thing I was to be accepted, to be safe. I'm a bigger dude, like I can hold my own. My last name has put me in some situations, and I've been incarcerated. I will bless you. But the thing about it is, a lot of people don't feel the same way I do, you know? So when they come, you know, they can't be themselves, they can't be safe, they don't know how to act, you know what I'm saying, in situations. And I was just able to allow them to come in there and grow. And now it is an LGBT house. I don't live there, obviously, anymore. But the owner of it seen what it was doing for our community. And there's actually another LGBT house that is forming in the area as well. And it just shows, you know, like in our community, like when we are helping someone else and they see it, like the community sees it. And the beautiful thing about it is that there's been probably 10 people that have came from out of state to come to that house. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not just so much because Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky is very, you know, gay accepting. And there's a lot of, you know, the community there, but it's mostly people who drink, like the bar scene and all that stuff. So having people that are coming from Michigan, Florida, Tennessee to come up there to live in an LGBT home is amazing. And I'm just glad that I was able to be a part of that. And I sponsor a lot of them now, which is hilarious because I didn't think I would ever be a sponsor. I thought I could just, like, you know, fly under the radar and be like, I have one. You know, like I did that for a little bit when I first got sober. But then I was real close to drinking, so I had to actually start putting some work in, you know, behind it. But that's the beautiful thing. Like, the people that I sponsor now, and not all of them are sober, you know, and that we've had a couple of them move from out of state, move there, and relapse, you know. But the thing about it is, it's like, they still call, you know. One of my sponsees right now had, he came from Michigan, and he's been in and out of treatment, because that's where I work there. But he's been out like probably four times, but he still calls, you know, and there's still hope that he's going to, you know, get it. And the thing about it is, it's like he's able to go out into the community when we do our sober events and stuff like that, and he still feels a part of. So he knows who to call when he needs to reach out and needs to vent, and hopefully he'll get it. That's all I got.
I'm Jada, alcoholic. Sorry, we were just like, what was the question again?
What do you do to reach out to help others that are feeling nervous and insecure? Help them see that they're not alone.
Money. That's not even what I just said, so just disregard what I just told you. Yeah, as far as, like, especially when I would go to LGBT meetings, like, I would identify as a lesbian. I'm a lesbian. And then I would be, like, dating men. Because, like, I still had that, like, oh, like, I have to fit in, and I felt obligated to, like, not stay true to myself, really. But I will fall, I guess, in the B of, what do you call it, sopa? Some soup? Hey, sounds delicious. But at the end of the day, like, at the end of the day, like, it's family. Like, I identify as family because, like, that's what it is. And staying true to myself, I have been blessed, like, and fortunate to be in, you know, being able to help another woman that's like, hey, like, am I bi? Am I gay? Like, am I a lesbian? Like, what? Am I pans? You know, all these things. And I'm like, first of all, you're an alcoholic. And second of all, you're family. Like, it doesn't matter. As long as you're staying true to yourself. You know, it's like what you see is what you get. And I can identify as whatever I want. I say I'm greedy because that's just because I'm extra. And that's the word I like to put on it. But I'm family. And, like, that's what I would give to anyone else that came with a reaching hand, right? Asking me, like, well, what did you do? Because they'll see me with a woman, then they'll see me with a man, and they see me with a woman, you know, and they're like, what are you? I'm like, I'm a fucking alcoholic, and I'm family. So that's what I identify as.
Hollis alcoholic. What was the question again? I'm just kidding. you know, for me, it's primarily, like, when I mentioned, like, going to straight meetings, like, you know, when I go to a gay meeting, it's pretty obvious that I'm gay. But, like, when I go to a gay meeting, I'm sure it's also pretty, or when I go to a straight meeting, I'm sure it's also pretty obvious that I'm gay, but, but, you know, I like to, you know, if, like, the topic or whatever is relevant to, like, my sexuality, you know, if it just happens to come out where I'm sharing about something and I'll, you know, say, like, my ex-boyfriend or, you know, make a reference along that line or, you know, whatever the case is. You know, I like to be pretty open about it in my share because it's important because there are people out there that need to know that it's okay to be you. And also, like, on top of that, like, I'm also a drag performer as well. So, like, you know, I think, for example, like, doing, like, the drag show last night, like, being that example of, like, you know, you can be sober and you can still, like, you know, dress up and, you know, be yourself and have fun and look sickening. it's also like, you know, just being, you know, sharing, like carrying the message not only in meetings, but also outside in the real world as well. And that also goes for like people who are also new and who struggle with, you know, like their sexuality or whatever. This is a safe place to be. No matter what meeting you're at, there's someone there that can identify, that you can identify with on another level. So I just try to, like, you know, like I said before, like, be that example of someone that you can reach out to.
All right. Thank you all for attending the panel. And let's thank our speakers one last time.